we get things rolling as we do every Tuesday, as we welcome to the show writer and critic Colin Fleming. Colin, good afternoon.
How's it going?
Yeah, it's going pretty well. How are you, sir?
Okay, look at that guest list you have. Wow, the main man in Maine, huh?
Stunning, stunning, but it peaks every Tuesday at about 5:04:30.
Yeah. Welcome to the Nadir. Let's do this.
Yes, indeed. Well, let's talk about John Lennon and a new box set of the Imagine sessions for him. It was his second studio album, right?
Right, after Plastic Ono Band, which I think is clear in a way, by a wide margin, the best solo album any Beatle released. And it's the only Beatles solo album that I would wager has a place on an all-time greatest list of albums. But Imagine was a bit of a distance off, but still top-rung Lennon. And I think the Beatles solo careers, I've never really been that massively into them, not just because of the heights that they were coming from when they were a collective, but there was a lot of autopilot with the Beatles solo careers. But this box set is the first effort made, really, to be compendious in documenting the sessions of a Beatles solo album. Now, we're getting that with the actual Beatles albums themselves, with the Sgt. Pepper package from last year and the White Album package coming up in a few weeks. But this is basically the solo Beatles version of it. I wish they'd do it with the outtakes from Plastic Ono Band, but there is a lot here to dig into with this particular set.
And this album was pretty interesting because of the comfort level. He recorded it, most of it, at his place in Tintenhurst. He had old friends around, like George Harrison. Klaus Voormann was there. Jim Keltner playing drums. And a guy he was already familiar with from his earlier work, Phil Spector.
Sure, Spector was there. He wouldn't have the role he would have later on when he'd do his whole wall of sound compounded by extra wall of sound treatments. And I think even Yoko Ono was a de facto producer on this. She had some say in what was happening in terms of from a kind of ideological standpoint. And what you end up with really, in terms of the album proper, is something that's a bit of a house divided upon itself. Now, Harrison was there, and Voormann was an associate from their Hamburg days, the pre-fame Reeperbahn days, and Ringo Starr, he contributed as well. But you have this kind of mix of Lennon being sigilous, petty in many ways, going after Paul McCartney and two of his ex-bandmates, helping him out in that cause, which seems, I don't know, a little middle schoolish.
Yeah, and that was How Do You Sleep, which was a pretty full frontal attack on Paul.
It was. And you have this kind of, some of the music isn't as interesting as it might be, but it's interesting in certain ways if we look at it the right way, like in terms of a vituperative attack on someone. I don't know how well How Do You Sleep works, because I would imagine that McCartney probably slept pretty well. But you have stuff going on musically that, like, for instance, the George Harrison riff that is kind of the centerpiece of that song. Harrison, by, like, 1968, so a few years before this, when he brought in Eric Clapton to perform on the White Album, on While My Guitar Gently Weeps, Harrison had become a virtuosic guitar player. He was as good, if not better, than Clapton by that point. It took him a while to get there, but that's kind of the guitar player he was when he performs with this song. And that riff, if you think about it, it's a very slow riff. It's almost like a Black Sabbath-y type riff. Now, most riffs in music history, whether you're Bach or you're Miles Davis or you're the Beatles with All My Loving, whatever you want it to be, riffs are usually pretty fast. And when they're not fast, they tend to lope, like Chuck Berry's Memphis, Tennessee. It has a very loping riff. But a slow riff, like the Stone Roses, the B-side, they had a B-side called Ride On, which is like an early outtake version of Breaking Into Heaven, their song that opened their second album. It's a slow riff. But I was trying to think earlier today about slow riffs, and this is kind of like your Slow Riff 101. It's a great little burning rhythm and bluesy type of proto-metal Sabbath-y group.
Interesting to note, too, I was reading an interview with Jim Keltner earlier, and he talked about witnessing really firsthand for the first time that Lennon couldn't stand his own voice.
No, he couldn't. He told George Martin when he was in the Beatles that he wanted him to dump ketchup on it. And I think Lennon has the quintessential one-stop shopping rock and roll voice. Now, he was in a band with someone who technically was a better singer. McCartney had more range by far. But Lennon, to me, is the rock and roll voice. He is that kind of like leather lungs, lay into this track, Gene Vincent, but better than Gene Vincent ever was type of singer. And he had that extra quality that McCartney didn't have as often, that sort of extra human quality that moved from the personal to the universal in a way that really I don't think anyone quite did at Lennon's level. And yet there are moments on this album where I have to say that I think very little of the song Imagine that gives its name to all of this. And I think Lennon was nailing it in with that song. The whole notion of the song is basically, oh, imagine the world's perfect. Like, gee, thanks, bro. I mean, imagine no one you know ever dies. But like, there's no sort of solution offered. There's no depth. It's just imagine that everything's wonderful. And I think he sort of ran out of gas on the lyrics themselves. So it's like, you know what? I'll do this kind of curly cue falsetto routine at the end of the lines, and it's nowhere near the level of the falsetto in I Should Have Known Better, for instance. And, you know, a friend of mine thinks that a falsetto means that you speak in an NPR voice. And so that got me wondering, how many people know what the word falsetto actually means? And if you know it by some chance, it's that kind of like high note part that woohoo at the end type of thing that he does, and you hear it right before the bridge on I Should Have Known Better. And it's just kind of this disingenuous, utopian, very basic, plinky-plonky piano that I think was completely out of character for his artistry.
I like a couple others much better. I like It's So Hard and Jealous Guy.
Jealous Guy, now that is a big boy piece of writing, lyrically, musically, and it was, if you're a hardcore Beatles person, you would have known it first as the demo Child of Nature, which was taped as part of the Escher demos at George Harrison's home when they were, before they started work on the White Album. And it was very hippy, dippy, trippy kind of lyric. You're a child of nature and yay, the sun and flowers and everything. And Lennon was always a deeply jealous person, a violently jealous person. And if you think about I Should Have or Happy Just to Dance With You, right, which Harrison sang, but Lennon wrote it. And think about the parts, like if you're dancing with another guy, there's going to be like problem. I am not going to be keen on this at all. And I think we have to be careful when we conflate a person and their life with the singer of a song. It's like first person story. That's not necessarily them, but he was writing from a very emotionally true place for him. It's a beautiful melody. It's a much more sophisticated lyric than what it started out as. And what was the other one you liked?
It's So Hard.
Oh, right. That's just a very tough, bluesy Lennon groove. Right? Lennon was a bluesy guy. And like I said, it's just this musically kind of all over the place album. There are hardcore blues grooves like that, and it could have been a throwaway with someone else. The closing number, Oh Yoko, it's this kind of beautiful hymn to, I was listening today to Liszt's Faust symphony, and at the end there's kind of the idealization of the feminine, and it made me think of the close of the Imagine album with Oh Yoko, because she was definitely this light post for him. She was very much a guiding influence, and I think she changed who he was or brought out characteristics that maybe he hadn't tapped into before in ways that were new to him. And that's kind of a perfect sort of sing-songy homage to her to close out the album. And you can feel however you want to feel about the whole John Yoko dynamic, but it's very difficult to listen to that song and not get caught up in it and find your head bouncing along to it.
And Jealous Guy, when you were talking about that, I couldn't help think that it was a more mature version of a song that I find hard to listen to from early in the Beatles catalog, from Rubber Soul, Run for Your Life.
Run for Your Life is a reworking of Baby Let's Play House by Elf. So the most objectionable lyrics for most people, that's sort of what he's riffing off of. But a lot of rock and roll, look, John Lennon said that, well, I can't use the gerund, but it rhymes with bucking. And he said that's what rock and roll is about. And that's why he liked it so much. There is a hardcore edge of machismo in rock and roll. And a lot of it is just peacocking around. And whether it's Gene Vincent, Eddie Cochran, Jerry Lee Lewis, listen to some of the things Jerry Lee Lewis sang. Like the Star Club album that he made in 1964. Or listen to this album, the reunion album, Question Mark and the Mysterians from 1984. They're in Dallas. And Question Mark, he's naming out all the people in the audience he wants to do the most like graphic things to. And he's singing a song, Girl, You Captivate Me, and changing the lyric to Girl, You Masturbate Me. And technically, if you were wondering, listeners, that can be a two-person effort. I looked it up years ago. So, yeah, it's a more mature, somber version of that. But, like, Lennon wrote a letter to Stuart Sutcliffe, obviously before Sutcliffe's untimely demise. And he was talking about the things he felt growing up. And he said something along the lines of, I can hardly remember something that caused a sadness as deep as this. And I think he was someone who was operating from within a pretty real world of pain. And sometimes when you're in pain, you're the dog cornered, you show more teeth than you want to. And I can get that with that Rubber Soul track.
Colin Fleming weighing in on the Imagine Session box set from John Lennon. Colin, as always, great talking with you. We appreciate it. Let's do it again next week.
Okay, sounds good.
Colin Fleming here on Downtown.